In a world where data has become more valuable than oil, we face an unprecedented crisis of privacy. Heidi Boghossian's I Have Nothing to Hide arrives as a crucial examination of the myths that enable mass surveillance in America. The book has garnered attention from privacy advocates and civil liberties organizations, with Edward Snowden calling it essential reading for anyone concerned about the future of democracy. What makes this work particularly compelling is how it methodically dismantles the comfortable falsehoods we tell ourselves about privacy and security. Boghossian, a former executive director of the National Lawyers Guild, brings both legal expertise and accessibility to a topic that affects everyone but is understood by few. As surveillance technologies become increasingly embedded in our daily lives, from smartphones to smart homes to facial recognition, the book serves as a wake-up call to a society sleepwalking toward a surveillance state. With data breaches creating a new identity theft victim every 2 seconds in America, the stakes couldn't be higher. Yet most of us continue surrendering our most intimate information with barely a second thought, leaving what Boghossian calls the crown jewels of our personal lives essentially unguarded. The smart home industry thrives on a compelling promise: technology that makes our lives safer, more convenient, and more efficient. With the market growing approximately 12% annually and expected to reach 125 billion devices by 2030, this vision clearly resonates with consumers. Surveys show 74% of smart home users report feeling safer with these technologies installed. But this sense of security comes at a profound cost. These electronic sensor hives continuously gather, store, and transmit data about residents to manufacturers, marketers, and government agencies. They track not just our habits, but enable active eavesdropping, as revealed in 2017 when Samsung smart TVs were found recording conversations and sharing them with third parties, including the CIA. Amazon has aggressively expanded in this market, particularly through Ring doorbells that create a vast CCTV network with troubling implications for privacy and civil liberties. After acquiring Ring in 2018, Amazon pursued partnerships with law enforcement, hosting parties at police conferences to encourage collaboration. By 2019, over 400 police departments had potential access to homeowners' video recordings. Many cities have even paid Amazon up to $100,000 to subsidize cameras that police then sell to residents at a discount. The Internet of Things began modestly in 2000 when Kevin Ashton and MIT researchers miniaturized RFID technology to track lipstick inventory. These rice-sized chips, which can be implanted in products, clothes, and even humans, evolved to store additional information beyond simple identification. For corporations, this technology represents a future cash cow, as cloud-connected sensors collect endless data about our movements, preferences, and habits. Children are being indoctrinated to accept this technology through smart toys that can identify what they're eating or talk to them. While corporations extol the efficiency of self-managing homes that free us from daily toil, each connection creates vulnerable points of access, expanding what cybersecurity experts call the attack surface for potential hackers. Having established their devices and residential security, tech giants like Google are now pursuing smart cities designed with connectivity from the ground up. These wired cities use electronic data collection sensors to manage all city functions and resources. By integrating information and communication technology, proponents claim they maximize efficiency, safety, and economic growth. Critics, like New York Times columnist Farhad Manjoo, describes them as dystopian techno-capitalist hellscapes. The tragic case of Breonna Taylor demonstrates how the popular myth, "I have nothing to hide, so I have nothing to fear," fundamentally misses the mark. Taylor, a 26-year-old EMT with no criminal record, was killed when police executed a botched search warrant at her apartment. Her story proves that even innocent people can face devastating consequences from overreaching authorities. This myth ignores how easily anyone might run afoul of obscure laws they don't know exist. With thousands of federal crimes scattered across roughly 27,000 pages of the United States Code, plus nearly 10,000 additional regulations from federal agencies, innocence provides little protection. prosecutors have such broad powers that, as New York Chief Judge Sol Wachtler famously noted, they could convince a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. The myth also wrongly suggests people who break laws don't deserve privacy. Our justice system fundamentally operates on the principle that everyone is innocent until proven guilty, a concept dating back to the 1500s and formally codified in the 1894 Supreme Court case, Coffin v. United States. This presumption of innocence requires constraints on police powers, including the requirement for probable cause before searches. The false dichotomy between safety and privacy ignores that we can have both. Privacy serves crucial societal interests, including protecting domestic abuse victims from homicide, enabling confidential suicide prevention services, allowing anonymous HIV testing, facilitating whistleblowing, and helping solve crimes through anonymous tips. Privacy is fundamental to individual autonomy, our ability to control what we reveal in different contexts. Without it, we lose freedom of expression and authentic behavior. Research confirms the observer effect, or Hawthorne effect. People alter their behavior when monitored, typically conforming to perceived expectations rather than acting naturally. Trusting government and corporate handling of personal data is increasingly naive. Federal agencies and their corporate partners have repeatedly proven untrustworthy, monitoring civil rights leaders and anti-war activists who challenge the status quo. Massive data breaches have exposed millions of sensitive records from government agencies and corporations alike. Most breaches stem from human error, improperly configured databases, device theft, or misplaced hard drives. The nothing-to-hide myth dangerously underestimates the potentially repressive nature of the all-seeing state. Law enforcement and intelligence agencies equate encryption and online privacy tools with criminal activity, claiming that disguising one's identity must mean hiding something nefarious. This myth facilitates mass surveillance and pressures tech companies to build backdoors for police access. In reality, only about 3% of users connecting to hidden services are engaged in illicit activities, while most use privacy tools for legitimate reasons. Encryption protects government systems, including those used by intelligence and law enforcement agencies themselves. The crypto wars emerged as academics, researchers, and privacy advocates sought to protect user data, while intelligence agencies wanted access limitations to thwart foreign intelligence. Financial institutions led the push for strong encryption, followed by tech companies and social media platforms. Two cases highlight ongoing tensions. After the 2015 San Bernardino shooting, the FBI sought court orders to force Apple to decrypt a shooter's iPhone, which Apple refused before a cybersecurity firm eventually unlocked it. Similarly, after the 2019 Pensacola Naval Air Station shooting, the FBI again requested Apple's help with a newer, more secure iPhone. Attorney General William Barr criticized encryption as creating law-free zones, while a Washington Post investigation revealed the FBI had exaggerated claims about inaccessible devices by at least 4 times, undermining their going dark narrative. When Homeland Security pressured a New Hampshire library to stop using Tor, public protest quickly forced restoration of the anonymity software. IT librarian Chuck McAndrew emphasizes the need for technical competency among politicians who legislate these matters, noting that poor computer literacy in government leads to dangerous laws that weaken security and endanger the average citizen while claiming to do the opposite. Security experts consistently maintain that an internet resilient against fraud and espionage is incompatible with government backdoors. Tor remains critical infrastructure for internet freedom, enabling activists worldwide to communicate safely under authoritarian regimes. As McAndrew points out, anonymity has historical precedent. When Thomas Paine published Common Sense, he did so anonymously, allowing him to create one of the most influential works in American history. While government mass surveillance seems ominous, corporations conduct equally massive surveillance both as government contractors and for their own profit. They gather consumer information through an expanding network of smart devices, including home assistants, security cameras, fitness trackers, and even household appliances. corporate espionage operations deploy sophisticated tools to prevent trade secret theft, while dedicated teams monitor activists, journalists, and whistleblowers who criticize corporate wrongdoing. A Washington Post investigation revealed approximately 1,931 private security companies and 1,271 government organizations engaged in intelligence gathering under counterterrorism justifications, creating a vast surveillance industrial complex. As contractors, corporations circumvent constitutional protections that constrain government agencies, operating in a legal gray zone with minimal oversight. Privacy has become monetized, not as a right, but as a luxury good, with companies offering premium products like VPNs, encrypted messaging services, and secure email platforms to protect browsing history while the less affluent remain exposed. This creates a data tax for participating in democracy, disproportionately affecting low-income communities where automated surveillance equipment performs control functions similar to historical monitoring of marginalized groups. For example, facial recognition systems are deployed more heavily in low-income neighborhoods, and data brokers specifically target vulnerable populations with predatory financial products. The NSA's mission evolved from code-making and breaking to monitoring Americans' electronic communications under the 2008 FISA Amendments Act, establishing a framework for private sector collaboration. Edward Snowden's 2013 revelations exposed how private contractors like Booz Allen Hamilton conduct surveillance for government agencies, abusing mandates to collect vast amounts of domestic information, including email metadata, phone records, and internet browsing histories. Private contractors openly acknowledge they operate without constitutional constraints, creating concerning precedents for accountability. As legal scholar Kimberly Whale notes regarding Eric Prince's proposal for private mercenaries in Afghanistan, the Bill of Rights would not constrain Prince's army, and nefarious activity could occur in the name of the U.S. government with little public recourse. This same principle applies to domestic surveillance contractors who collect data with minimal restrictions. Corporate surveillance threatens both privacy and dissent through specialized risk mitigation companies that conduct domestic surveillance of activists and organizations. These firms produce detailed briefing documents identifying threats, not to safety or health, but to corporate profits and reputation. They monitor social media, infiltrate activist groups, and create databases of individuals deemed threatening to corporate interests. SeaWorld exemplifies this practice, having infiltrated PETA by sending employees to pose as activists while encouraging illegal sabotage to discredit the organization. When exposed, corporations typically downplay their infiltration while characterizing legitimate activism as credible threats, using their surveillance capabilities to suppress criticism and maintain control over public narratives. The myth that America lacks national ID numbers persists through semantic games rather than reality, like the politically expedient rebranding of torture as enhanced interrogation or global warming as climate change. Avoiding the term national ID number allows leaders to maintain the illusion of American exceptionalism while implementing comprehensive identification systems. America actually has two de facto national ID systems, Social Security numbers and Real ID. Though technically non-compulsory, both are practically mandatory for full participation in modern society. The Social Security number has experienced significant mission creep from its original purpose. As Carolyn Puckett of the Social Security Administration notes, it has become a number assigned at birth and used by many government agencies to identify individuals and by private industry to track an individual's financial history, the one unique tag that follows an individual throughout life. After 9/11, advocates like Alan Dershowitz promoted national ID systems as anti-terrorism measures. Proponents claim such systems enhance security, reduce racial profiling, increase law enforcement accountability, and prevent identity theft through forgery-resistant credentials. The security benefits of national ID systems are largely mythical. A 2004 Privacy International study found no correlation between national ID cards and terrorism prevention, 80% of countries experiencing terrorist attacks between 1986 to 2004 used national ID cards. Identity verification does nothing to predict terrorist tendencies, as demonstrated by U.S. Army veteran Wade Michael Page's 2002 attack on a Sikh temple. Rather than enhancing security, mandatory IDs may incentivize identity theft. While features like holograms complicate forgery, the Electronic Frontier Foundation warns that biometric databases create honeypots vulnerable to exploitation. ID programs outsourced to private companies lack public accountability, creating interconnected vulnerabilities across multiple databases. Electronic IDs, EIDs, appear to be the inevitable evolution of real ID cards, with over 80% of countries with national ID systems already using them as of 2017. These cards contain microprocessors enabling stronger document verification, online authentication, digital signatures, and often biometric identification through stored fingerprints. While authorities claim these systems help secure borders, verify employment status, prosecute criminals, and combat fraud and terrorism, citizens in the Five Eyes countries have strongly opposed biometric national ID schemes. Their concerns are well-founded. Biometric systems have significant weaknesses, and unlike passwords or signatures, compromised biometric data cannot be reissued. Drones have numerous civilian applications beyond warfare, from life-saving rescues to photography. In 2017, Australian lifeguards used a drone to drop a float to two distressed teenagers swimming far offshore, enabling their safe return through powerful surf. Unmanned aerial vehicles can access dangerous locations without risking human lives, aid search and rescue missions, help firefighters with gas and infrared sensors, gather air samples, and map remote areas affordably. While unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, have military origins dating back to 1849 when Austria dropped explosives from hot air balloons over Venice, their evolution into surveillance tools accelerated when the U.S. military first used them for photographic reconnaissance in the mid-1950s. Video capabilities transformed their utility, with remote-controlled Gnat gliders, later renamed Predators, first deployed in Hungary in 1995, capable of detecting movement from 60 miles away. Surveillance drones have now become fixtures in civilian life, offering perfect surveillance platforms that can remain airborne for extended periods, often fly undetected, and carry sophisticated cameras and tracking software. In May 2020, a military-grade MQ-9 Reaper drone from U.S. Customs and Border Protection circled 20,000 feet above Minneapolis during George Floyd protests, potentially using facial recognition to catalog protesters. Baltimore's controversial aerial surveillance program, launched in May 2020, demonstrates the evolution from public safety to mass surveillance. Though using Cessna aircraft rather than drones, the $4 million contract with Persistent Surveillance Systems employed sophisticated wide-angle cameras covering one-third of the city in each frame, with resolution sufficient to distinguish individuals. Three planes flying 12 hours daily covered 90% of Baltimore's area, creating what ACLU attorney David Rokaw calls a virtual time machine, allowing police to trace anyone's movements. This technology represents an unprecedented surveillance capability, the technological equivalent of having a police officer follow you every time you walk out the door. The 2018 Supreme Court decision in Carpenter v. United States recognized that new technologies require preserving privacy from government intrusion, with Chief Justice Roberts noting, "Surveillance tools have enhanced government's ability to encroach on areas normally guarded from inquisitive eyes." The affordability of drones dramatically increases their surveillance potential. At under $20,000 for infrared-equipped models, compared to $3 million for police helicopters, departments can deploy hundreds of drones instead of a single helicopter. These drone fleets can watch individuals unnoticed from thousands of feet away, use automated identification software, and follow targets without human pilots. The myth that surveillance makes the nation safer emerged after 9/11 to justify widespread spying on citizens. Despite billions spent on counterterrorism, the results have been disappointing. As Dana Priest and William Arkin noted in Top Secret America, taxpayers funded massive surveillance without questioning what they were getting for their money. The U.S. Army War College's own assessment is blunt. U.S. efforts in the war on terror have been largely ineffective. In fact, since 9/11, more Americans have been killed by terrorist acts than before, and the number of extremist organizations has increased nearly fourfold to 230 Salafi jihadists across 70 nations. Throughout American history, surveillance justified by national security has repeatedly trampled civil liberties while failing to make us safer. These initiatives have stigmatized entire communities with devastating consequences and no security benefits. Following World War I and Russia's Bolshevik Revolution, America began enforcing the Sedition and Espionage Acts to prevent communism spread. In the 1950s, Senator Joseph McCarthy's anti-communist crusade gained 50% public support as he targeted supposed infiltrators in government. McCarthy also deemed homosexuals security threats, claiming the pervert is easy prey to the blackmailer. President Eisenhower's 1952 executive order authorized investigations of sexual perversion in government, resulting in 1,456 employees fired or forced to resign in just 4 months. The Lavender Scare ultimately ruined up to 10,000 lives and careers, with many victims driven to suicide. From 1956 until 1971, the FBI conducted covert surveillance programs called COINTELPRO, using secret informants, wiretaps, mail opening, break-ins, and bugs to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize domestic movements. Director J. Edgar Hoover targeted Vietnam War opponents, feminist organizations, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Cesar Chavez, the American Indian Movement, and the Black Panthers. After 9/11, George W. Bush declared a war on terrorism, targeting Sunni Islamist groups like Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The authorization for use of military force against terrorists allowed force against anyone deemed connected to the attacks. Critics note this shifted law enforcement from responding to crimes to preemptive policing with increased surveillance. With limited resources to track global terrorists, police expanded their capabilities by partnering with private companies to gather personal data and conduct public surveillance. Edward Snowden's 2013 revelations in The Guardian exposed the NSA's vast surveillance programs monitoring Americans' internet and phone communications, assisted by the FBI, DOJ, and corporations like Google, Facebook, and Verizon. Snowden noted, "The government and corporate sector preyed on our ignorance, but now we know." His disclosures prompted lawsuits challenging mass surveillance and some reforms, including the 2015 Freedom Act reducing mass phone data collection. When artist Hassan Ali was mistakenly placed on a terrorist watch list in 2002, his response was radical transparency. Rather than fight the surveillance, he flooded the system by documenting his entire life online, uploading thousands of photographs of everything from meals to bedrooms to travel logs. FBI, here I am, he proclaimed in his 2011 TED Talk, demonstrating how individuals might reclaim control of their digital identity by overwhelming the system that seeks to monitor them. Many Americans remain passive about controlling their data, believing the myth that resistance is futile against surveillance giants. This inertia feeds all other surveillance myths. Privacy in the digital age is fundamentally about control over disclosure. While power inequities between corporations and individuals are real, mavericks like Elai prove that meaningful resistance is possible. Austrian law student Max Schrems took on Facebook at age 23 after receiving 1,200 pages of his personal data. His complaints to the Irish Data Protection Commissioner led to landmark rulings by the Court of Justice of the European Union, invalidating the Safe Harbor Agreement and questioning the adequacy of U.S. data protection. These rulings forced significant reconsideration of U.S. surveillance practices and privacy protections. Surveillance whistleblowers have exposed covert government programs at great personal risk, from Perry Felwock revealing Echelon in 1971 to Russell Tice exposing wiretap activity to the thin-thread NSA whistleblowers challenging the Trailblazer Project to AT&T technician Mark Klein revealing telecommunications surveillance, these individuals have shed light on hidden surveillance apparatus. Edward Snowden's 2013 revelations about PRISM and other programs may be the century's most impactful, halting at least some illegal surveillance practices. Privacy requires both individual and societal action. Practical steps include conducting a privacy audit of your devices, using free Libre and open source software, FLOSS, recognizing that free services often harvest your data, choosing privacy-focused tools like Signal, DuckDuckGo, and Firefox, strengthening passwords, encrypting devices and communications, implementing two-factor authentication, embracing no-knowledge systems that don't retain your data, and organizing crypto parties where people help each other implement privacy protections. Magistrate Judge James Orenstein, a former federal prosecutor, refuses to rubber stamp surveillance requests, understanding that with no adversarial process, judges must be vigilant guardians of privacy. He notes that outdated laws fail to address modern surveillance technologies, leaving prosecutors to decide privacy boundaries. Congress must enact meaningful privacy reforms, including ending the artificial distinction between metadata and content data. Market solutions could include taxes on targeted digital advertising to discourage data harvesting, as proposed by economist Paul Romer and endorsed by Tristan Harris, who compares data monetization to fossil fuel extraction, the most profitable business models, but also the most polluting. Louis Brandeis recognized technology's threat to privacy long before the digital age, co-authoring the first article urging a legal right to privacy in 1890. As Judge Orenstein notes, as the pace of technological advancement increases, the need becomes more urgent for society to balance those interests in a coherent, fair, and democratic way. All four branches, the three government branches, plus individual citizens, must participate in rebalancing privacy protections. The stakes couldn't be higher. Our privacy, and with it, our autonomy, our freedom of expression, and ultimately our democracy, depends on our willingness to challenge the myths that enable surveillance. As Boghossian makes clear, the first step is recognizing that we do, in fact, have something to hide, our fundamental right to determine what parts of ourselves we share with the world.